Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Ah, the Bills running away now.
You're listening to the best of the Bills.
Touchdown, the first play from scrimmage.
A weekly mix of WGR 550's best NFL talk to get you ready for game day.
Maybe you saw it, maybe you didn't. Mike Vaccaro of the New York Post headline, Josh Allen is the NFL's new unicorn.
It's Jeremy White.
Josh can be a narwhal, whatever you want. I don't know. He can be a narwhal. Yeah, narwhal. Don't know what a narwhal is?
No, I know what a narwhal is, but do you want to be a narwhal?
Why do you want to be a unicorn? Is the unicorn have powers? Or is it just rare?
And Joe DiBiase.
Can't they, like, shoot lasers out of the
unicorns shoot lasers out of their horns?
Yeah, can't they?
Freaking laser beams attached to their heads.
Lasers. The people that first crafted unicorns, right, so Josh, lasers did not exist.
All right, so how about Lamar can be the unicorn and Josh is a Pegasus? He does fly through the air more often than Jackson. Jackson doesn't jump over people.
Pegasus is an actual character, though. It's not a Pegasus. He would be Pegasus.
Pegasus is a character in what? The Idiot or whatever?
What? Bro, what are you talking about, man?
The Idiot?
Not the Idiot.
Oof, this is getting better and better.
Yeah. I got third string running backs on the mind right now. Sure. I can't be reaching into deeper parts of my brain.
You're listening to Jeremy and Joe on the home of the Bills. WGR Sports Radio 550.
I said Idiot, not Iliad?
Yeah, you said Idiot.
Oh, I mispronounced. Wow, that was tough. I didn't even realize I did that.
That was like the crowning moment. It really built up to the Idiot.
I really didn't even realize I did that.
Yeah.
It's the Iliad.
Which is going to be a Christopher Nolan movie?
Yeah. They are making it into, oh man, like it's going to be, doesn't the long movie annoy you a little bit when they make it like overkill?
The Odyssey is the movie coming out, but yeah.
Oh, it is? Oh, okay.
But that's, yeah.
The length of that movie, I think, is supposed to be like 3.5 hours long.
Mm-hmm.
Like, longer than Oppenheimer, I think I saw at some point.
Okay.
It's going to be like the longest movie ever.
I will.
Probably will be awesome.
Maybe.
Christopher Nolan, you know. There's always high. There's high potential.
That means I'll see it.
There's high potential.
I'll see when he does a movie, I'll go see it. And this Matt Damon and big stars, Anne Hathaway, Tom Holland.
Yeah.
Zendaya.
Yeah.
Charlize Theron, Emma Thomas, whatever. I'll see it. It comes out in July.
Of next year.
That's right.
Yeah, July of 2026.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah. So we got a ways to go.
I don't like when they do that. That shouldn't be allowed. You shouldn't be allowed to announce something a year plus in advance. There should be a one-year cutoff for when something's announced.
Oh, and this one we've known about for like, already we've known about it for a year.
Yeah, that's right.
It's been like, hey, this movie's going to come out in 2 years. Like, oh, sweet.
Happens with the movies.
Remind me like 3 months before, and then I'll get excited.
Happens with video games. Happens with the Breaking Bad season when they're like, oh yeah, 2.5 years, we're back. What?
That's what are we in the middle of? House of the Dragon is that right now.
Oh, okay.
House of the Dragon, was it a year ago that season wrapped up? And I think we have another year to go until the next season.
Too much time.
Yeah, 2 years in between is not fun.
Should be illegal.
To be fair, production for this movie started in February.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that it's already going to be done next July is kind of crazy. Like, that's a quick turnaround time.
Yeah. The Odyssey.
It's kind of like the Bills Super Bowl. It's like in production. You like that segue? We just don't know if it's 2026, 25, 27.
It was a mid.
It wasn't very good. I didn't plan anything like that. Anyway, good morning, Jeremy and Joe. Happy Thursday. We got a game tonight. I found, by the way, yesterday I told you a bunch of the features that Amazon will have.
Yep.
I found an article that shows graphics to all of them. So Amazon tonight with their next-gen StatsCast, you don't have to watch any of this because if you're... One, don't have Amazon Prime and they're not going to stream the game because you don't care. There you go. That's fine. If you do have it and want to watch the regular broadcast, you can just watch Herb Street and Al Michaels, Kirk Herbstreit, Al Michaels.
Mm-hmm.
But then the additional broadcast, the Next Gen Statscast, Amazon put out a article with all these pictures of what they're going to do, mm-hmm. showing how pocket health will work. The quarterback drops back, and you see where the breaks are coming in the offensive line. Feels like that's one you could see anyway, but maybe yeah. what that'll highlight is if a power rush is moving the guard back further than it's supposed to, and whatever. Pocket health, an AI-powered graphics package. Path to victory. Here's one where they put it over a Steelers-Ravens game, and it's 4th-and-1. And it says, Steelers, if the stop is by 7:24, there are 2 predicted possessions remaining.
Okay.
So they'll tell you, because don't you don't
how
you
many
do,
chances to score you got left?
Yeah, don't you do that math in your head sometimes? Here's one where it's a time remaining. With a 3-and-out, 1:55 is the predicted time remaining.
Okay.
We could talk about this as some AI-powered model, or it's just as easy as, hold on, 40 seconds times 3 and a timeout. We all watch the game and we do that. How much time will be left? They're going to put it on the screen. 1:55 remaining if you force a 3-and-out. There's also the victory formation, which is the other side of it. With a 3-and-out, there's 1:55 remaining. With a 1st down, they can kneel out the game. They'll put that on the screen. Mm-hmm. These are insights that are not even that insightful. They're just,
just helpful.
Why'd we wait till 2025 to put on the screen a 1st down ends the game?
Right.
Great idea. Defensive alerts. Predictive AI model that's going to have coverage IDs. That's what they're adding this year. If you watched last year, they would put a circle around a guy they're thinking is going to blitz.
Going to blitz.
And it's always right.
Yeah.
Which is kind of amazing. Coverage ID. You're going to see who's going to drop into zone. Zone, whatever, in real time before the snap.
Mm-hmm.
Prime targets, you see the picture they've got is not just the side-by-side view where the routes look like they're running Madden. Now they've got it from above like a Madden camera.
Mm-hmm.
Sky cam kind of deal.
Okay.
And the best one and the one that they are maybe in at risk of overusing, Joe, is the 4-down territory because I'm looking at a screenshot where it's the Niners and the Giants, and the Niners have 3rd and 10 from the 11-yard line.
Mm-hmm.
And there's the yellow line for a 1st down at the 1, and then at the 3.5, it says 4-down territory.
That's like where they have to get to we would recommend going for it.
Yes, which is cool.
That's cool.
The question is, how often will they use that? Because if
every 3rd down,
well, is every 4th and 1 a go for it? Because if it is, I don't really need 2 lines on the screen for that.
Right.
Is it only
right? Because then that could be confusing if I got a line right next to the 1st down line. Not confusing, just maybe annoying.
A little bit clunky. In this example, in this example of Niners and Giants of what would be on the screen, it's 3rd and 10 in a scoreless game with 8:53 left in the first quarter. So I don't know that everybody wants 4th down territory on the screen in that scenario.
Yeah.
So even though it might be right, you know, that's something interesting. Field goal target zones. This one, to me, is the coolest.
Mm.
And I think we've seen a little bit of this with CBS from time to time. Team is driving. They'll show the field goal range in yellow for this distance, green for this distance, and red for this. Anyway, that's all coming tonight for Packers and Commanders.
Does it make you wonder if there are any teams out there right now that are just using all of this?
Oh, it makes me think that there are several teams that are definitely doing exactly this.
Like, they have incorporated, like, if this AI is predicting on the telecast for us to see what defense what coverage the defense is in, wouldn't every team in the league want that?
Yes.
If it's like 95% accurate?
Most would.
It's probably more often than a quarterback would be accurate, judging that.
I would guess the Steelers wouldn't want this, but almost everybody else might want this. Maybe the Raiders might not want this. Carroll and Tomlin, you know, a bygone era. No, but one of the things, when I tweeted this out, someone wrote to me, boy, that seems like a lot of information that, you know, do I really need all that? And I think, the person wrote was, coaches are going to see this and get a lot more questions, or coaches are going to feel pressured into going for it and blah, blah, blah. And I thought, no, I think the only thing that changes is that we now have the information that is being radioed into Sean McDermott's headset, right? When it's 3rd and 10 in a situation, I'm sure the Bills have an analytics staff of sorts. There's someone saying, if you get seven here, it's a go. And McDermott kind of knows that, or Joe Brady would kind of know that.
Right.
If we get 7 yards on this play, it's a strong go for it. Okay, they know that. The difference is now we will know that. And the broadcast will add in those layers. So, you know, you got that, or you got run and stop the run, which might be a part of tonight's broadcast.
Run
for,
and stop the run.
It might be that. Packers Commanders.
Hopefully Herb Street's a little more plugged into the league this time, too.
Yeah.
Because that's been the biggest complaint about him. There aren't many complaints about the Amazon Prime broadcast. It's, like the halftime show crew was awesome, and or pregame, halftime, postgame, Whitworth, Fitzpatrick. The two minor complaints generally are Herb Street doesn't sound like he watches the league.
And
sometimes
Al Michaels sounds asleep,
and that's the other one. They have given him a slate of games where hopefully he's energized by that.
But going back even 2 years ago, there was, man, he kind of sounds like he's not into this. And he's back again.
He's back again. This is his 40th season. He is 80. So it tends to happen. I think once you get into your 80s, you're not yelling as much about the game. So we'll see what we get on that. Those would be the two that I hope just sound a little bit better. Everything else I love. It also feels like the quality of the picture is always better on Prime Video for some reason. Like just that could be my eyes playing a trick on me, but I love the Prime broadcast. I think they've done a great job with it.
I'm just glad that Thursday football is back. This used to be the joke game of the week.
Oh yeah,
right? Isn't
the Titans Jaguars Bowl?
Yeah, exactly.
Yes,
the Titans and Jaguars in color rush uniforms is the Thursday joke that lived for a decade. And now, maybe because it's a isolated broadcast and because it's big, big money, the games are almost all pretty good. Your schedule for the Thursday broadcasts, it's Packers-Commanders tonight, which is a great game.
Mm-hmm.
Bills-Dolphins next week. It's one of the reasons I wanted to talk about all these changes coming to Prime, because if you watch this game on Prime next week, Bills-Dolphins next week, I don't know if you think it's a great game, but it's Josh Allen in prime time.
Mm-hmm.
Then it's Cardinals-Seahawks. But which is not great, but it's okay.
It's average.
Sure. A lot of divisional matchups. Rams, Niners.
Good.
Great. Eagles, Giants. Half great.
Yeah.
Bengals, Steelers.
Good. Very good.
Chargers, Vikings.
Like that.
Ravens, Dolphins. Broncos, Raiders. Jets, Patriots might be a little bit of a dog. Bills, Texans. Eagles, Bears. Cowboys, Lions, Falcons, Bucks. Seahawks, Rams. Then they've got Christmas. Chiefs and Broncos.
That's good.
And a wild card game. So it's not every game is perfect, but it's far from the Jaguars Titans gradient color rush mustard bowl.
Gradient colored. That is the jersey that would wear it, wasn't it? Gradient. You were into gradient though.
I think it could be used well. Yes. I think there's
it could also be used poorly.
Yes.
Like in that circumstance.
Yes. I feel like people in graphic design usually say gradient is always bad, and I do not agree. I think sometimes it can be used well.
They were a quarter away from making the Super Bowl in those things.
Yeah.
Which is nuts. Good. Exciting. And tonight it's Commanders and Packers. I mean that's
a great game.
That's awesome. I mean who's the Eagles' number one threat bowl tonight?
Yeah, I think so, because the Lions had a rough week one, and Green
Bay. The Rams, I thought, could have been that, but, man, they just didn't look healthy with Stafford on offense. Last week, they didn't do much. And then the other team would be Minnesota, but McCarthy doing that in his first year starting seems like a lot, doesn't it?
He was named the NFC Offensive Player of the Week, J.J. McCarthy.
I saw that.
With, like, 130 yards passing.
Maybe, yeah, was it not a great week for NFC offensive? I mean, he was great in that fourth quarter.
Yep, just like Josh Allen, the two offensive players of the week were just they piled it on in the fourth quarter because McCarthy had a great fourth.
But Allen had like 250 yards in the fourth. McCarthy had like 90.
Yeah,
in the fourth quarter. So very two different fourth quarters. He was fine. He was fine. He's I think fine. By the end of it, but not. Them making the Super Bowl with him in year one would shock you, wouldn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Like it's Commanders and it's Packers for me right now, battling who's gonna beat the Eagles. And the Commanders are in the division, so that would be probably worse news for Philadelphia if it were them. So I like this game tonight.
Me too. Excited for it. Fall weather, football on Thursdays.
The world gets introduced to Jacory Kroski-Merritt
That's
tonight.
Right. Bill, as he goes by.
Bill
Kroski. Is it Bill Kroski-Merritt? Is it just Bill?
No, his name is Bill. It's okay. Either Ja'Cory Krosky Merritt or it's Bill.
Okay.
I think it's one of the two.
JCM was right there. He doesn't want JCM. You get a nice three-letter nickname. Those fly. JSN.
Yeah.
MJD. Who's the best? LBJ. The JFK.
Right.
I went right to the, yeah.
Who's
three-letter nicknames work.
Well.
RG3. That counts.
Does it?
We're counting it.
Does it?
Yeah.
It's a number.
The cadence of it's the same.
Okay. Yeah. It's a lazy nickname, though, isn't it? The initials is a lazy nickname.
I guess it means you haven't earned another one.
Hey, what's Kevin Durant's nickname? Let's KD. Go with KD.
KD.
Really, really put a lot of thought into that one.
It might be lazy.
Slim Reaper, always his best nickname.
No, agree.
Much better.
Disagree. So Bills, Jets. And on the Jets this week, it'll be interesting. Do you have any more respect for the Jets today than you did 7 days ago? Ask yourself that question, and then I have a follow-up question. If the answer is yes, isn't it only because maybe they can score?
I was going to say yes, and I think that's the reason.
And isn't that the case with any team we're talking about the Bills playing? If they can score, we respect them. If the Jets had lost 3-2, we would laugh at them.
We would laugh at that now game. We would laugh at them.
Their defense might be incredible, but we'd say, oh, come on. If you can't score, you can't play with the Bills.
Right.
That's talking about the Chiefs, talking about the Ravens, the Bengals. Why do Bills fans respect the Bengals? They can score.
Yeah.
We respect teams that can score. Baltimore can score.
Yeah.
Anybody else? The Rams? Yeah. The Lions? Okay. The Eagles? If you can't score, I don't get out of bed thinking about you ever. And that's the Jets with a big performance on points. I don't know if the Steelers will continue to put up points. They did last week. It's one game. Maybe those two teams are just sloppy and that game goes into the 60s on the total. But they both scored. And all right. You have my attention for a moment, Justin Fields. You have my attention for a moment, Breece Hall and Garrett Wilson. This Jets team, when the Bills have played them, we've seen 17-16 and kick returns, win in overtime, and 22 points is a good day against the Jets. And I kind of expect this game this week to be higher scoring than most Jets games. The Bills can score.
Yeah.
And the Jets, against this Bills defense, they might also be able to put up points. So 1 week in, and I respect them a little bit more just because of the potential there.
I wonder how concerning it'll feel if they can't stop Justin Fields, even though they might be able to. They scored 32 against the Steelers in week one. If they put up 32 again against the Bills, how's that going to feel? Because I respect them more after week one, but I don't respect them enough that it would make me feel okay if the Bills have a bad day on defense on Sunday against the Jets. I feel like this is a quarterback who's got flaws that you should be able to expose. And the Steelers really weren't able to do that much in that game from what I saw. They did a little bit at the end of the game. They got him harried around and he decision-making, processing. The final play where it's fourth down and like four, and he's got a lane to run for the first. He throws it to Garrett Wilson, who's about to get popped, which is exactly what happens, and the ball's out and it's game over. So there's like decision-making stuff there with Fields that I'd like to think like that's where your defensive coach is thinking, oh, I know exactly how I'm going to confuse this guy all day.
He's not nearly as good as Lamar in a lot of things that he does.
Right.
But I
do respect them more. Some of it is the coach. I like the coach
Aaron
there.
Glenn.
And yeah, like how he sounds about certain things, not everything. Hated the way he sounded about, you know, being offended at the idea that you could pass to win in this league a couple of weeks ago. But you know, they were looking for credibility. They were looking to not be a dumpster fire. They were looking for their version of Vrabel. Vrabel was going to go into New England and clean the place up and make them, a professional organization after they were not that last year. And you'd expect Vrabel to do that. I thought the Jets were trying to do the exact same thing with Aaron Glenn, and I think he's probably done that. Like, don't want to go too far with this, but all the Jets players are like fighting the Steelers and Jalen Ramsey on Sunday after cheap shots, and like just there were certain things like that all throughout the game, where it's like, that looks like a real football team.
Do you think they finish in second in the division? I mean, that's a big glow up for them. They were roundly predicted to finish fourth.
Right.
And 1 week in, are we at least sliding the Jets up to third and maybe fourth? They had, is it even debatable, they had the best opening week performance of the other three, Jets, Patriots, Dolphins?
I think so.
I mean, the Patriots were eh, and the Dolphins were a complete mess.
Yeah. I guess my question would be, is their defense about to be not very good anymore or not great anymore? Because I liked what I saw from Fields and Garrett Wilson and Breece Hall in week one, but do I expect that offense to be able to carry them week in and week out? I don't know if it'll be that good.
Doesn't Justin Fields always do this, though? Start a season with a little bit of false hope. Last year in Pittsburgh, Fields and the Steelers started 3-0. He beat Atlanta. Okay. He beat Denver. He beat the Chargers. Then he lost a pair.
Then he got benched.
Won a pair. Lost his job.
Yeah.
He lost his job kind of quickly because they go to Russell Wilson. And here he might have more room to kind of just play. But he didn't put up monster numbers in this game against the Steelers. He passed it 22 times for 218. He didn't run all over them. His longest run was 15 yards.
Yeah.
12 carries for 48.
No, it was a run game for them. Yeah. Like a run game with the running back.
That's Hall. Right. It was Breece Hall running for them and having a decent day. And Fields, he was a game manager that, you know, QBR was around 80, quarterback rating 120, no picks. He kind of did what he did, got sacked one time. And if they, I don't know, he just came from Pittsburgh. How much more game manager can you get than what the Steelers used to ask of their quarterbacks? But the Jets, maybe they can find a way to get this thing and be respectable.
Yeah.
They'll play, of course, a last-place schedule. Or, sorry, third-place schedule because the Patriots finished in last in that division.
Yeah. Like, do you know, like you asked, like, will this be, you know, more of an offensive game? You know the last time the Jets scored more than let me put a little bit of a
more than 20 against the Bills?
More than 20 in regulation against the Bills.
Okay, without a okay.
There was a punt return touchdown in an overtime game that got them to 22. Last time they scored more than 20.
Against the Bills.
Against the Bills.
Whew, boy.
I'll give you a hint. Sam Darnold was their quarterback.
Okay, the game that they won here in their rookie year, Allen versus Darnold.
Yep.
He threw a late touchdown to win.
Yep, December 9th.
Is that like 24-17? What's the score?
27-23.
Okay.
That's the last time they scored more than 20.
It's Sam Darnold's rookie year.
Yeah, 7 years ago. These two teams play twice a year. The last time, and they've actually given the Bills fits.
Yep.
But it's always on the other side of the ball. It's always they have had answers when Saleh was the coach for Josh Allen that nobody else has had. Not that they've scored. Zach Wilson has won games 20 points 7 years since they've topped you on that, you know, other than a punt return in overtime past the four quarters. So, like, this would be a game where, like, I could. The way they looked in week one, I could see them putting up 24, 27 points. I mean, the Bills' defense also might not be as good as it's been in most of these years.
I think the Bills' defense might not be as good as years past. The Jets' defense might not be as good as years past. I mean, for Pittsburgh to put up that many points, I mean, it's Rodgers and DK Metcalf and Calvin Austin. It went all right for them in that opener. We'll see. One interesting element to this game is kind of like the Denver playoff game in that they've got Sauce Gardner, and he is apparently going to travel more this year with the number – excuse me, with the team's number one receiver.
Yep. Saw a bunch of that in week one.
Which means he covers who? Josh Palmer?
Coleman?
I don't think... The guy on the other side is Brandon Stevens, is their other starting corner. And we'll see about Coleman, because if Coleman is only getting open against soft zones, then maybe they feel like they can get away with Brandon Stevens over there. That would be my bet. My bet is they put their best corner on Palmer, because they think of him as the more dangerous threat to uncover, and they take their chances with Stevens on Palmer and I bet Coleman wins that matchup enough for the Bills to be happy with it. Well, that's all Coleman has to do. He doesn't have to win every single route, doesn't have to win every single rep. But last year teams were betting, I can cover that guy. And what happened in the Baltimore game was a lot of backing off and Coleman taking advantage of those opportunities. So I would bet, we'll see, I would bet that they take Sauce Gardner and put him on Palmer. I guess he could also go to Shakir, but I don't think he'd do that either. We'll see. It'll be interesting. When they have a number one corner, we kind of have to ask the question, all right, who do you cover? Where are you going to go?
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back. The Bills at 1-0. The rest of the AFC East 0-1 at the Jets Sunday, and it's also New England at Miami. I was thinking about something you were saying earlier, and I would love to hear like some feedback on this. You know, is there a game here? Maybe this was easier to say about the Baltimore game, but is there a Bills game here where they could win, but you wouldn't be happy? These are our lives now, right? Like, it's not enough to just win. Against teams like this, or what the Jets have been maybe for the few years here, that it might not be enough for everybody to just win. So you're like, it's all good. Any win is good. Just chalk it up. On to week three. That's it. The style points do matter in our conversations, though. I mean,
for sure.
The standings are the thing, but what I think everybody, especially Bills fans, but with what happened on Sunday night, what the conversation people want to have about them is whether this year will be different in the end. And you can't know that until the end, obviously. But, you know, games like this one could end up being, at the risk of sounding too cocky, they could end up being ones where, like, all right, well, we're not sure yet, you know, and the defense is where that is this week.
Definitely is how. I mean, sure. I mean, I'm as thrilled as any. Well, I don't know anyone. Lots of people are probably more excited about it. But I mean, it was breathtaking, incredible. Whatever you want to put on it, to win that game like that. But you know, I'm mentioning it frequently during the week here. The rookie defensive tackles basically had to be removed. And, you know, now you're going into this game and Ed Oliver's on a scooter with a protective boot on his foot because of some ankle injury, presumably, at some point. And we don't know what happened there. But if he can't go, then welcome to the starting lineup, TJ Sanders, who played 16 snaps, four of which were touchdowns. Now, like, that doesn't mean that was all on him. I didn't go back and, like, go forensics here on like what he did. Maybe he did his job well on some of those plays and that just, you know, went awry anyway. I don't know, but that's a horrible start anyway. And Walker was not much better than that. The two of them together were on the field for a couple of scores. So, you know, that's where you're looking, I think, primarily if you're hopeful about the defense being significantly different and better than it was last year. Sure, Bishop in for Hamlin, it should be an upgrade, but the summer came and went without any affirmation that that was going to be the case. Walker and Sanders took turns sort of flashing during the preseason and the summer. And you'd have reason to, okay, well, that's those, especially Walker, that's a different body type than I've had. And maybe that's going to be the answer I need to shore up this run defense. And maybe everything will build from there. You know, if a team can't get off running it, maybe they'll have a harder time passing it. They'll be forced into passing, etc. I mean, that just did not happen in any way, shape, or form. Baltimore just could do whatever they wanted on the ground, and the passing was just a compliment to it, basically, on Sunday night. So, yeah, the reviews, you know, overall, incredible. They won 1-0. Baltimore, Kansas City, 0-1, number one seed, pole position. Okay, great. Like, I said all that. I mean all that. But, I mean, you get up under the hood and look at what the defense did and how they performed play to play. I mean, outside of Oliver, Bosa had some disruptive moments. I'm excited by that. But overall, I mean, they got trampled. And the new guys, again, Walker didn't play a snap after some point in the third quarter. They had Oliver and Daquan Jones playing close to 70% of the snaps. That's not where they want to be, more like 60-40, I think, with those guys in the middle of that line. So,
but you think they couldn't risk it?
They couldn't. Yeah, I think they felt like they needed to get them out of there. So, the first trial balloon of my reshaped defense, these assets being poured into the defensive line. And again, Bosa is a part of that, and he flashed enough. You know, he got caught a couple times, but he caused that fumble. He made some plays. He was in the backfield. I know Jackson made he and Rousseau maybe look silly, but Jackson can make the best players in the league look silly back there in the open field. The point is, Bosa, to me, flashed enough for me to feel like he may be a disruptor, and that may be really helpful. So they didn't miss on everything they did there. And I'm not saying Sanders and Walker are misses. I'm just saying they were minuses in week one. And so, you know, week to week, if we don't do grades or anything, but those guys would not get passing grades for this game. And that is primarily a couple of guys you're looking at to give you something you were lacking. That's why you draft Sanders in the second round. That's why you draft Walker. Their third round pick doesn't even dress. Again, another defensive lineman. So what? So that's a bad look, you know? And if that continues, then you got trouble, you know? But that's a part of the point about, you know, as long as I get wins, you know, sure, we'll talk about the warts and whatever the problems are and hope that they'll get better. And they got plenty of runway to get better, provided they keep winning. You know, it didn't cost them ultimately on Sunday. I mean, it was damn close to costing them, but it didn't. And so until it does, you're sort of like, just kind of, okay, well, they've got time to figure it out. First game, all that. Hopefully they learn, they take instruction, and the hard week that McDermott is referring to produces a better result against a lesser opponent, for sure. They're capable of doing some of, you said earlier, Baltimore light. I think that's, you know, dollar store Baltimore. That's kind of what the Jets represent here. Hall is big, but not as big. He's faster than Henry, but that's a different kind of challenge. And Justin Fields is bigger than Jackson, I think, you know, physically, but not as gifted a runner. But he's, you know, he's in the top tier of running quarterbacks in the league. He's very good at it. So you've got sort of a unique situation here where you have a chance to demonstrate that, yeah, the improvements are going to take root and we're going to be better. And it's, you know, right away, quick, you know, turnaround from week one to week two. It's a similar enough opponent that you would expect to try to test you in a lot of the same ways that Baltimore did. And, you know, what kind of result am I going to get on the test? We'll see. But again, week one was very tough.
Yeah. This will be a very interesting game to talk about on the heels of Sunday night, because mostly, I'll use the same word I've been using this week, like the afterglow of that win last year, the stadium, prime time, Josh and Lamar, you know, all of that put together, it's a wonderful game to remember and talk about and just, wow. If Sunday is a struggle, it'll be like, do you guys remember the first 50 minutes of the game Sunday night? Like, it just, they stole it and it erases. I had a conversation with a friend who's like, what a great game. One of the best games I've ever seen. And it is in the end. But most of the night, it was just like the Ravens were on a higher level than the Bills. The Bills did things offensively to mostly keep up, but it looked like one team was much the better team of the two. And again, like, it goes both ways. We don't get to know until January what is going to happen in January. But everything is like some indicator. And I don't know if Sunday, if I would say that game, that opener, puts me in a better place about their chances, except for one reason, the standings. Because Baltimore lost and Kansas City lost, and the lead is theirs already. Like, in that way, yes, but other if not for just like
and, incredible and Allen's performance, of course, yeah. But
Allen's performance, but we already came to expect that from him. I mean, it was bigger volume out of necessity, mostly. I mean, 394 yards, right? But nobody had any doubts about whether
that Allen, he could do that, right?
You know, right. And he's done that even in the playoffs.
Yeah, the question is, even going back to last hour, how often do you want to have to call on him to do all of that? Right? I mean, it's a long year, and you know, you wouldn't expect him to have to play like Joe Burrow played last year every week. Like the Bengals did not get right to the playoffs last year because their defense was so bad, despite Joe Burrow. You know, he doesn't leap over tall buildings in a single bound like Allen can, but he put on a cape last year and had an incredible season, and it didn't mean anything. You don't want to end up there. I mean, and I'm not suggesting the Bills are headed there, but I mean, that game Sunday was, if you're looking for signs that they shored up their defense, the safeties were bad. The new tackles were bad. The linebackers, frankly, that's supposed to be one of the stable parts of this team, they had a tough night. You know, Oliver flashed. I think Bosa flashed. Russo did some things. But overall, they got bad play out of guys that they're just going to need a lot. But the linebackers especially. You know, I know you need the guys up front to do their job and all that, but I mentioned this yesterday, which a great breakdown from Joe Marino. Numerous times, Bernard just does not take the right route. He just allows himself to be sealed off. And, you know, some of that was specifically on one play, the quick snap that Baltimore was using. There's a play where Bernard is still, his head is turned. He's talking to people and gesturing around, and he looks back and the ball snapped.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like you weren't ready. They caught you there. So hopefully that, you know, goes away with time and repetition here. But it was tough. There's plenty. Yeah, I didn't want to go too hard at it on Monday or Tuesday or even yesterday because of what you said, the afterglow of the win. Like, you bunch of ghouls, what are you doing in there? You know, the Bills won the game of the year, maybe. You know, we'll see what happens the rest of the season, but it's certainly going to be up there for the game of the year. I don't think anyone that watched it or was there is going to forget this game anytime soon. But within it, again, if you're like most crucial offseason objective was to shore up your defense so that Josh Allen doesn't have to do what he did in the fourth quarter, I don't know anything else to do but give you an F for Sunday. I mean, it just did not happen at all.
They really haven't had a season yet where the Burrow mention is really good. Like, they have not had to do that yet. They have not had to be – It's at the middle of the whole, if you will, controversy about their receivers. Is, you know, the Bills are basically like, it's good enough, guys, right? I mean, we've won. Maybe you didn't notice that we set a franchise scoring record. Like, it's good enough. And I think on the other side of it, a lot of us are going, well, one of these days it might not be. And how would that happen? Because if they can't stop anybody, then are you going to – and they did on Sunday. I mean, they even got – just forgetting about why it happened or the defense part, but they had five guys with at least 4 for 48. Kincaid was 4 for 48, and he came in fifth, you know, among their receivers. So if they need it, will they get it? And, you know, a lot of these games last year, we didn't get that answer. Kansas City, you know, the playoffs happened, and that was the most important game, and they didn't get it when they needed it there from Cooper or the Kincaid play at the end. So, like, that – the Bengals year from last season, the Bills have just not been pushed like that, you know? And maybe if it is close to the worst-case scenario on defense, they still might be fine if, like, the division is so bad.
Yeah.
It's not the one seed, though. But you could win the AFC East with a team that ranks bottom third and
right
defense.
I brought up the Bengals just so it doesn't turn into like any kind of a runaway train. I mean, the Bills still have enough, I think, good players on defense, even if the defensive tackles don't smash. I mean, they played Baltimore. It's a very tough matchup. That's an elite team all around, especially on offense. The skill sets are pretty unique with Henry and Jackson. You know, Russo, Bosa, Oliver, they've got guys. Like, I don't think Milano and Bernard are going to be terrible all year. But I don't think they had a very good night on Sunday night. And, you know, a lot of that could just be the matchup and everything else that was going on around them. I would expect it to stabilize, but that brings you right back to this Sunday. You know, can you handle a team that, sure, they may philosophically want to bully you like the Ravens did, and they have similar enough personnel. The running back might, you know, is their maybe their second best offensive player after their number one receiver in Wilson, who's better than anyone Baltimore really has at receiver. And then, you know, the quarterback is, you know, a couple steps down, more than that, from Jackson. But athletically, he's similar enough that if you can show that you can handle that, more than handle it, I mean, just, you know, shut it down. Like, hold the Jets to 80 yards rushing or something in this game, which, I don't, you know, maybe that's too heavy a lift. I don't know. But if you can do it, then everything that I've just said here in the preceding 15 minutes is sort of like, okay, well, we can put some gauze on that at least for now. I don't know that the wound is sealed, but we're not bleeding. You know, they got on the field and they stabilized, and, you know, some guys showed up and had much better week twos than they did week one.
Let's go to Dennis here. Hi, Dennis.
Hey, guys. So, you know, I got to guard myself against criticizing, you know, too much here. I mean, they just scored 41 points in a great win. Sometimes I feel like, you know, Allen, I think to most people's eyes, would agree, if he's not the best player in the NFL, he's top three, right, in most people's eyes. And sometimes I feel like the Bills don't know how to have the superstar quarterback. It seems like their game plan is, in my eyes, correct. It doesn't have to be in my eyes, I guess, but where they lean into him. And then there's other times where it just seems like they try to lean into everyone else, and everyone else is not nearly on the level as Josh Allen. So, like, for the example, you know, a couple of those drives that they had where they stalled out, you know, three runs in a row to James Cook. I mean, I don't mind giving the ball to James Cook. That's not my point. But the point is the calls that we made and the times that they made, three in a row, and it's a punt. You don't even let Josh have a drive. Then the next drive is three screen passes out to either tight ends or wide receivers, which are really just running plays. There's one option. It's just Josh throwing to the one guy the play is designed for. So you're not even letting him be the MVP. You're leaning on other guys. And then when you have to lean on him at the end, then he does the Superman stuff. And I think that they need to be able to understand who they have there and lean into him earlier, and then they don't have to get into some of these positions.
Well, I understand. I mean, I
think all of that's fair. The only caveat that I think, and this is hard for us to know out here without going through, I'm not capable quickly enough here for the context of this conversation to, like, go call up the All-22 and look at those three run plays. But did Allen switch into any of that, right? He is given that autonomy to do that. So that is going to be a part of this conversation, and it's a vague part of it because we don't always know when we're sitting here. We're not looking at the plays to know, like, what did they call there? Did he switch to something because of what he saw? You know, this is not to absolve all the conservative play calling. It's just that the knee jerk is always to, it's Joe Brady, and what kind of play call was that? And it doesn't always take into account whether or not Allen saw something that caused him to change the play at the line of scrimmage. Like, he should have that ability to do that. And again, I'm not positive that that's happening in any of those situations. It's just that it could be. So I want to just pump the brakes a little bit on that without really knowing what's going on there for sure.
Yeah, again, I think I've already said it. It's what we've been talking about here for a bit. It's ironic that the game, for as amazing as it was in the end, and as much of a highlight show that Allen and the offense put on, it doesn't make me feel better about, like, what they are overall. Because this receiver thing that we've argued about for years may end up being tested. That's what could happen. You know, we're saying the same thing a few different ways. If their defense isn't, you know, at least average. And that's, we're just getting started here. Yes, Baltimore, but, I mean, what did it really look like? So
not even average.
Yeah. And I think the Jets, as I've said also, the Jets' performance in week one is, you know, it's maybe not a team anymore that if they had a good day offensively against you, you'd get really scared. I mean, we don't want to see it, but maybe they're actually pretty capable. There's a clip on Twitter today from the Lebatard show. Two different guys were talking about Dan Marino and Shula. And if the show hasn't sounded older than right now, I don't know. But
these are former Miami Dolphin quarterback and coach, by the way.
One
out there.
Yes. One commentator was saying that Shula failed Marino in his prime years by drafting defense. You know, the things, these are kind of familiar, sort of the team building stuff that we've sometimes argued about with the Bills. And where was sort of a further commitment to him? Better weapons, you know, not running the ball as often. I mean, it was a very different time. Would have been more kind of insane if the Dolphins sort of leaned farther into Dan Marino, but they really didn't. And the other guy in the conversation said that he talked to Shula late in Shula's life, and that Shula said that that was one of his regrets, is that they didn't do more for Marino. Hmm. So, you know, we don't want to end up there. But
no.
So far, that's kind of what we've got. I mean, we've got a quarterback that's basically unstoppable, and, you know, the Bills have obviously come very close. And here I say it again, we won't know these answers for a long time. You know, whatever the Jet game looks like, you know, they just, right, like you keep saying, the point is to win. And hopefully they get those advantages come January if they win often enough.
I'm like in a dream right now. It's unbelievable. I mean, I don't know if I've ever been this happy after a win. It's obviously, it's just the first game of the year, and we gave up a lot of points, and I could be better in a lot of ways. But, you know, we got the win, and we gave our offense a chance. And I guess when you have Josh Allen, you just have to give him a chance, and anything's possible. But I'm in shock right now. That was unbelievable.
Bills edge rusher Joey Bosa in the post game from Sunday.
Welcome to the Bills.
I've really enjoyed the dichotomy between Joey Bosa on the field and then when he's with the media. There were some celebrations I saw on the field of Bosa running around screaming, yelling, hugging everybody. That man gets in front of a microphone. Yeah. I'm in shock right now. Just a deadpan voice. It was the same way in his introductory press conference that he's just deadpan voice. Just, hi, how you guys doing? He did look much better in the second half. I am very excited to see what Bosa can do this year. Fingers crossed, of course, knock on wood. We'll see how this goes, especially with his past. But once he stopped biting so hard on the read options, he was much better in the run defense. He was also a big part of their pass defense as well. Again, that third and 10 play where they've got Lamar Jackson retreating 15, 20 yards, he was a big part of that. It just was a shame that he got in Rousseau's way, essentially.
It's that his miss takes the other player out and he doesn't have a chance.
Yeah, right.
That's the unfortunate part about it. I really am interested to see what happens here with the Jets this week because of the fact that they do have a lot of similarities in terms of quarterback and identity and running the football right now after week one. And because of Fields and who he is as a player, he is far more willing to run the football than even Lamar Jackson, I would say, in terms of willingness, not ability.
Mm-hmm.
But the guy can pop.
Yeah.
And I'd imagine that the Jets are salivating over that defensive film and saying, we can do this too.
Yeah, we can do this. This is not out of our wheelhouse. This is not something that, I wish we had this guy. They can do it.
Can Oliver bully the interior line again? Because I don't think the Jets have as good a line as the Ravens do.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you can get to Fields a little quicker. If you can do that, you slow some of these things down, you make some plays, get them behind the sticks a couple of times.
Well, and this will also be something, too. We have basically not touched on the offense at all today.
No, because why do you – ready? It's kind of funny because of that, because why do you need to? The only time I did was I mentioned how, you know, the Jets have Sauce Gardner, but they also gave up 4 passing touchdowns to Aaron Rodgers. They didn't give up a lot of yards, actually.
No. Especially late in the game, the Steelers were able to take advantage of short fields, yeah.
But there's a fumble to kickoff.
Right.
Fields has a turnover.
Like, there were a couple turnovers in that game. They made mistakes. You can cause the Jets to make mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
That's the full context in that. I also think the Jets are, like the Bills, better defensively than the numbers show. Which is, the Jets gave up the third most points in the league.
Yeah, that probably won't continue to be a problem for them, at least to that extent. But on the Bills' offense, we're talking about the run game, stopping the run, what have you. Bills were able to do that last year when they got up early. Again, we're not talking about the offense too much.
Game script.
It's the game script, but also go back to the beginning of the game real quick here. Bills take a 7-0 lead. Boom. Right down the field. Great. This looks awesome. That's literally the best vibes up until the last 10 minutes
mm-hmm.
is that first drive and then the Ed Oliver sack. You know, I saw Sneaky Joe tweet it out right after that, and I still agree with that. It may have been Ed Oliver's biggest sack of his career. The problem is, what's that second drive? Run, 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 punt. Argument's sake, Bills go up 14-3. How much are the Ravens still running the ball? They probably are still running it to an extent, but not a lot like Detroit last year and some of these other teams that are built through the run, they're not built to be from behind. And you're already down 14-3 on the road. How much does that change? And that's where I look at the Jets.
How much does that matter? Because mm-hmm. Zay Flowers was tormenting them.
Right. No, that's absolutely right. So maybe it doesn't change too much. But looking at a Jets team that really only has Garrett Wilson, Alan Lazard, I think, was out last week, and they don't really have a second option receiver-wise outside of Wilson. He was still great. But all of a sudden, that's where I look at maybe a Jets team, and this could be something that happens, especially when you look at the Jets defense and how they did against the passing game. Get on them early and get them away from wanting to run the ball with Breece Hall. Get them to a point where, let's remember, as much as we're talking positively about the Jets, they're 0-1.
They are 0-1.
So they won't be thinking about, well, no, let's stay pat. You know, keep on game script. We'll keep running the ball. They have to avoid going 0-2.
They do.
Very quickly, the good vibes there run out. When you're 0-2 and all the statistics of, when's the last time an 0-2 team makes the playoffs or what's their percentages, all that stuff, all of a sudden it starts getting thrown around. And then, so they probably, especially the rookie head coach and a quarterback like Justin Fields, they may move away from what they're comfortable with to try to get back in the game.
They also showed a propensity to be aggressive right out the gate with this coaching staff. Aaron Glenn made a couple aggressive fourth down decisions already.
Mm-hmm.
He went for it early, went for two early. They also didn't make it. It's not a great day for two-point conversions.
Let's not do jump balls for two-point conversions. Let's not do that.
Yeah. It just overall wasn't a great day for two-point conversions on Sunday. But the Jets showed that they were willing to be aggressive with this stuff. So, yeah, you're staring at 0-2, looking down the barrel of a gun. They might want to push back in a more desperate way
because mm-hmm.
they already showed that they're willing to be aggressive about it.
Yeah, 803-0550, the number to call. Let's keep getting connected to our fans. When we do so, it is brought to you by Northtown Kia, Western New York's number one Kia dealer. Shop online at northtownkia.com. Let's go to Mike here next. Mike has been waiting a good while. Mike, how are we doing?
Good. Can you hear me?
Yep, we got you loud and clear.
Yeah, okay. All right, well, say good morning. It's the first time I've ever called. I got a couple things I just kind of like to comment on. But as far as Derrick Henry, you can't say enough about that guy. And I wish he was on our team.
Yeah,
and,
that's fair.
Ed Oliver. God, that's got to be a great game. But, really what I was wondering about the draft. You know, it's like I don't know how many picks we had. I think we had 7 picks. But, you know, it's like if they could make more trades, seems like if we could have, like, 3 impactful starters, great players, rather than, 7 that are not so great. You know, I was just wondering what your opinion is on that.
Yeah, Mike, thanks for the call. I will tell you right now, they will probably make a trade at the deadline. They have definitively the last 2 years. I haven't gone back past that to make that case. But at least the last 2 years, when they've had a need, they've made a trade. Cornerback Rasul Douglas, last year wide receiver Amari Cooper.
Third round picks have been the price to pay.
That's usually the price to pay. I'll say in terms of the draft and making those trades, I would much rather them do kind of what the Eagles just did. Trade away a 6th or a 7th and go get Tank Bigsby. Right. Not saying the Bills need a running back, but we're using that example because it literally just happened. I'd much rather have that than a seventh rounder who we're all happy they took him, but he gets cut midway through camp. That's, I think, trades I'd much rather have. They're trying to get those impactful players. I don't want to criticize them too much for the defense because ultimately that's where they put most of their draft capital in this year. The problem is some of these second-year players and even some of the rookies have to take that step and become the impactful players. That's where the frustration really lies with Cole Bishop. He's a second-round pick at safety. That's the highest pick they've used on that position in well over a decade because you look at Hyde and Poyer. Number one, they didn't even make the picks, but also those two weren't that highly picked. Cole Bishop comes in with all that pedigree. You hope he's going to hit. You hope that's an impact player. Along that line, Ed Oliver. That's the last time they picked within the top 15. And they've needed him to be that impact player. It's been inconsistent at best.
You have also been on this for a little bit now, of like, you know, hitting the home run on the draft pick. It doesn't matter where, but there needs to be that star player on the defensive side of the football that you've drafted. And it's been a bit, even if it's just overall, doesn't matter which side of the football, but you've been on that now pretty consistently of there needs to be that home run.
They get NFL players. That's maybe the most frustrating thing. They usually get guys that will be NFL players.
They even get quality starters.
Yeah. Their biggest problem is you don't see, I call them name players, but really it's blue chip players. It's those kind of guys. I'm not asking for, I need my first round pick to be a Hall of Famer. No. But I do need them to be in conversations for Pro Bowls and on their best year an All-Pro where, you know, with Ed Oliver doesn't have a Pro Bowl. He has that 9.5 sack season, but top 15 pick on a great team, by the way. They've regularly been in these primetime games, 11 to 13 wins. Hasn't gotten there yet. Benford is a very unknown analytics. You know, the people that really dive deep into the film, they love Benford. Of course, Buffalo, we love Benford. But he hasn't really broken out yet.
He's a deep dive darling.
Yeah, we have not gotten there with the blue chip players. They are trying in the draft. They just aren't hitting them. Now, I will say, as much as I have been a critic of being in the draft, Howie Roseman of the Eagles went through this period as well with Andre Dillard and Jalen Reagor in back-to-back first rounds. That's a hell of a screw-up.
Those are almost franchise-defining screw-ups if you hadn't been able to recover.
And this is also in ways, I'm putting that loosely and in quotations, the problem of having a quarterback like Josh Allen. On your worst season, you're winning 11 games. You're not going to really be in the position to go get Jalen Carter. Or let's look at the Ravens. Kyle Hamilton gets there because Lamar Jackson gets hurt in a year and they have Snoop Huntley playing games for them. They're not good that year. And so they get Kyle Hamilton. The Bills have legitimately not been in that position since 2019, really.
Yep.
They have not been in that position. And they probably won't be for a long time now. That's where we all get excited about Deion Walker of, man, did you just steal what should have been a late first-round pick at worst, but because of a back injury, is a terrible senior season, he falls to the fourth. Did you just nail this? Or Max Harrison, who, 4-3 speed at a corner shouldn't be available at 30, but you got him. Like, that's where I think both of those two become so important going forward. And it doesn't have to be next week, but going forward, they become so important.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
why it's
outside
not,
of Cleveland,
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Coach's Office, presented by CFBT, Copier Fax Business Technology, the official office technology company of the Buffalo Bills. So, Steve, we know that the defense did not have its best day last week. So we know there were a lot of discussions in the coach's office about things to correct on the defensive side of the ball. Even Coach McDermott said this week, the way he divided up his time was he reviewed the offensive tape and the special teams tape first so he could spend more time reviewing the defensive tape and presumably meeting with Bobby Babich and the other defensive assistants.
Yeah, there's a couple of layers to this. Coaches will go in and they'll say, okay, we got, if you got guys making mental mistakes or in the wrong or not doing gap integrity defensively and playing the wrong technique, that's something you need to teach better. But it becomes multi-layered then. Now you got to make sure they know exactly what they're supposed to do when you call it. But there's new calls this week that they got to learn completely from scratch. And you got to do a better job and use different techniques of teaching them how they're supposed to do it and what they're supposed to do. It's not just as easy as saying, well, we got to, you know, make sure you get this down. Why didn't they get it down the first time is the real question. And you got to address that first.
Yeah.
So there's probably some disgust both from the coaches and the players about how that went on Sunday night. And they got to address all of that. So it's a big conversation that goes on all through the week. Probably took place on Monday, and then started to, you know, formulate in action on Tuesday and today and yesterday and today. So there's a lot in it. You got to get to the root of why didn't you guys do the right thing here? What's the problem? Now jumping off sides, I get it. He got faked out by your own guy, but taking the wrong gap. Taking a guy on with the wrong shoulder, you know, what are we doing here? You know, that's then you got to get your mind around that and how to fix that.
Drilling down on the fundamentals, yeah, which is what Coach McDermott mentioned. He said part of our problems this past week on defense, fundamentals, little inexperience with youth. And there was a third thing in there that I'm trying to remember that he said, but. Effort was not the problem, but, you know, when things are new and you have new guys lining up next to you, sometimes things get lost. Oh, he said communication. That's what he said. So fundamentals, some communication, and basically some youth and inexperience. Those were the key factors that he listed when he talked about the defensive performance as a whole. We should also mention that the Thursday injury report is out for the Bills. And there is a pretty important new addition to that injury report. Ed Oliver is listed as a non-participant due to an ankle injury. So we'll have to see what that is about. It was a walkthrough practice today, but they still have to provide an injury report based on if it was a full practice. So ankle injury for Oliver, did not practice today. Also added to the injury report, Jordan Hancock with a shoulder injury. He was a limited participant today. If you remember, he suffered a shoulder injury in the preseason against Chicago and was not seen for the rest of the preseason. So whether that is a injury that has resurfaced, we'll have to wait and see. The good news, Taron Johnson, limited in practice, along with Shaq Thompson, after missing Wednesday's practice. So those two guys are trending in the right direction. And then the other good news, James Cook goes from a limited participant to a full participant in practice today. So it looks like he, along with Brandon Codrington, who was a full participant in practice after being limited on Wednesday, are headed in the right direction to being available on Sunday. Dawson Knox, Tre'Davious White, Greg Rousseau, still limited in practice for a second straight day. So we'll have to keep our ear to the ground on the Ed Oliver injury.
Shaq Thompson's back on the field in
limited
capacity.
Yes, we mentioned that.
Yeah, yep. So not great about Ed. The one defensive guy who showed up in big way on Sunday night with a sack, a forced fumble, and a tackle for loss. He was a good night, and they needed it. I don't know whether this happened yesterday in his off time or whatever, but man, oh man, that stinks.
Yeah. So we'll have to see where it goes between today and tomorrow, and then find out what his final practice status and status for the game on Sunday will be. We'll know that tomorrow by now, because the Friday injury report typically comes out earlier, because the practice session is usually earlier on a Friday. So we'll wait on that. I know Coach McDermott is scheduled to address the media tomorrow, So we'll presumably get a better update at that point in time on the Ed Oliver injury. If you're just joining us, he was added to the injury report after not practicing today in any capacity due to an ankle injury. So that's kind of where it sits. We'll get back to the phones, though, as we are asking you today, what is the Jets' strength that you believe must be neutralized by the Bills to ensure victory on Sunday? Back to the phones we go at 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. Open lines for you there, but we go to Tom on the west side. What do you got for us, Tom?
Good afternoon, gents. I'm very disappointed to hear that news. I agree with Mark. It was hard to call in earlier in the week. So I got to go back to last week. I had a lot of angst before that game. I had a lot of apprehension, and I was explaining to my son how the 1.5 points works for the point spread. And the fact was, whether you bet for the Bills to win or lose, you would have won. And if you bet for the Ravens to win or lose, you would have lost. But anyway, that was the angst part of it. I was miserable all day waiting for that game. Now, after hearing that injury report, I'm even more concerned because I agree that they got to be able to stop Fields and Hall. And that's going to be priority number one. Now, if Taron Johnson is out, are they going to start with a base defense and go 4-3? Or are they going to throw somebody into the nickel where we're already short at corner and safety? Because you also got to watch out for Garrett Wilson. Zay Flowers put a lot of – he had over 100 yards on us. I think he was the number one receiver last week. And Garrett Wilson wasn't far behind him. So we're going to have to be able to stop Garrett Wilson as well. I agree that Fields and Hall are not Jackson and Henry. But tell me whether you think our defensive line is better than Pittsburgh's or our defensive backs are better than Pittsburgh. Because this game is getting me in a high angst level again.
Well, you should. All right, thanks, Tom. Yeah, you should be in a high angst level because you're playing against the New York Jets, and whatever we think about the Jets in the big picture, they're still an NFL football team, and they're really good, and they got some really good players. They got a new coach and a new vibe, and you could see it against the Steelers. Now, I'm not saying the Steelers are world beaters. People are kind of looking sideways at them in the offseason, even with Aaron Rodgers going out and throwing 4 touchdowns. I'll say this: if Aaron Rodgers threw 4 touchdowns against the Jets, what do you think the Jets are thinking about Josh Allen right now? They've got as much angst as anybody. And so the Bills are going to come in there and play their game. But I would agree, you're going to have to score more than 20 points to beat this Jet team. Because they're with Fields and Garrett Wilson and Breece Hall and that offensive line that's playing better, yeah, they're going to be a little bit more of a handful. Ed is a problem. For now, he's a problem for the Bills, not the Jets, because he might not be around. That is a problem. You need all your guys healthy, and already they look to be without the only guy that really showed up on Sunday.
And Garrett Wilson, you know, you say, oh, well, Justin Fields is a new quarterback for him. Well, those two guys played in college at Ohio State, so there's already some built-in chemistry between those two. And we saw some of that last week against the Steelers. Now, the Steelers have a perennial all-pro defensive tackle in Cam Hayward. Bills don't have that. They also have a perennial all-pro pass rusher in T.J. Watt. Bills don't have that. So we'll have to see if the collective for the Bills on the defensive front is more effective than what we saw from the Steelers last week against the Jets. You know, it's apples and oranges, so...
Yeah, it's a good question, though, about the 4-3 defense and the Bills going base or going nickel, particularly with the health of Taron Johnson and the fact that Jordan Hancock is not practicing because of his shoulder.
Well, you have Cam Lewis, who is the quote-unquote backup nickel. So,
but you don't have – yeah, if you're going to go with the backup and then no backup behind the backup if neither one of those guys are available. But the point is
– it might be Codrington
you might
at that
feel
point.
Like your defense is better with a 4-3 and – you know, Dorian Williams on the field rather than an injured Taron Johnson or his backup on the field?
Yeah.
That's a good question.
Taron got back into the practice setting today after missing yesterday. He was listed as a limited participant with a quad injury. So we'll see if he can get up to full practice status by tomorrow. But he's trending in the right direction. So that's
encouraging. The Bills played some bases last weekend.
Yeah, they did, because they played a big-time running team with a 250-pound running back.
And by base, we mean Taron Johnson off the field and Dorian Williams on the field. They had three linebackers, Milano, Bernard, and Williams on the field instead of Bernard, Milano, and Taron Johnson on the field. They just have one more big body up in the front.
Yeah.
They may do that again.
Right.
Depending on the injury situation and the matchups they see on film.
It was still two-thirds nickel, one-third base, because Taron Johnson played 67 snaps, Dorian Williams played 33. So it was two-thirds nickel, one-third base.
That's
defense.
30 snaps more than usual, though.
Yes.
Than years past.
Yeah. So we'll see if that continues. And maybe they liked what they saw from Dorian Williams and the base defense performance. You know, they analyzed and reanalyzed every single snap and what was good and what wasn't. So they'll know exactly what they want to do going into this game based on what they anticipate from the Jets. And then I'm sure the Jets, much like the Bills, will have some new things for their opponent to be concerned about. And then you just got to adjust on the fly. And maybe it might necessitate playing more base defense or less. We'll have to wait and see. Let's go to Kevin in Hamburg next. What's up, Kevin?
Hey, guys. How you doing? Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Well, after hearing about Ed Oliver, maybe coming, maybe not, maybe limited, and seeing that rank of the Bills last against the rush, I got just four words for Bills fans. You know what it is? Lots of Hail Marys, and saying lots of them, and I don't mean the pass that Roger Staubach threw. I mean real Hail Marys with playing Brees Hall, who thankfully isn't a tank like Derrick Henry, but lots of Hail Marys, or maybe go to church if Ed Oliver can't play, and seeing that rank of the Bills last against the rush and all that. So I'll let you finish that. But lots of Hail Marys and maybe go to church if he can't play. So that's all I got to say and let you comment about that.
All right. Thanks, Kevin. Okay, thanks, Kevin. I mean, it's hard to hear that because everybody that watched the game knows Ed was the most impactful defensive lineman on the team last week. And it probably wasn't close. I mean, six tackles, three for loss, a sack, and a forced fumble. So you take that out of the equation, yeah, you have a right to be concerned. Yeah. We'll have to wait and see what his status is for the game come tomorrow and if he's even able to do anything on the practice field on Friday. Going from a not being on the injury report to not practicing at all the very next day is concerning. There's no question about it. There's no other way to put it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a problem. There's no question it's a problem. But you also got to think as well, there's a lot of guys in that defensive room. Certainly Ed had a good game and people have been talking about it, but you got guys like Matt Milano, Joey Bosa, Terrell Bernard. They're not happy with the way that game went. And they're going to be out to fix it. It's not just the coaches who look at that film and go, man, what do you got to do? The players do it too. So
yeah, they're frustrated by it.
There's going to be some internal pride and some disgust with how that thing went the other night. And the players will take it upon themselves to get better.
Yeah, because they know they're capable of better.
Yes, exactly. I don't think you have to worry that the effort is going to drop or that they're going to lose heart because Ed's not there. They'll suck it up and play hard, and they're going to get better. The guys up front are going to get better. The young guys are going to play better, and hopefully starting this week.
Yes. We have to take a break here. Before we do, we should mention ESPN's Kimberly Martin is here covering the Bills this week. She is reporting that she talked to James Cook, who was listed as a full participant in practice today, and he said he is good to go. He will not have any limitations for Sunday's game against the Jets. That according to Kimberly Martin, ESPN reporter.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.